the headlines from Australia and New Zealand to Europe and all the way to the United States. Palestine supporters shout in union against Israel on the anniversary of its creation. Lebanon is holding key parliamentary elections with economic challenges a big issue on voters' mind. And Swedish people protest against plans to join NATO as foreign ministers from the military alliance assess the likelihood of membership of Sweden and Finland. Hello and welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumi Shahmadi and these are our top stories this hour. Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank have held demonstrations to mark Nakba Day, or the Day of Catastrophe. And that is when Israel was created 74 years ago. Demonstrators waved Palestinian flags. They had placards with signs reiterating their right to return to their ancestral land. The protesters also carried pictures of journalist Shireen Abu Akleh, who was fatally shot during an Israeli raid on Wednesday. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas issued a statement that pledged to continue resistance until the Palestinian territories and the Al-Aqsa Mosque are liberated from Israeli occupation. The Nakba marks the beginning of the expulsion of Palestinians from their motherland in 1948.
A day reminding of calamity and ruin, of losing a homeland and means of livelihood. That's what Palestinians are reminded of each year on May the 15th. They call it the Nakba, meaning a catastrophe in Arabic. On that day in 1948, the so-called State of Israel was established. Attempts to create Israel had begun several decades ago, when Zionism emerged as a political ideology in Eastern Europe. Those attempts were shored up by Britain in 1917 when it issued the Balfour Declaration, backing the establishment of a national home for the Jewish people in Palestine. The declaration was included in a British mandate, itself part of a system the winners of the First World War agreed upon to rule the territories they had captured. Under the system, Palestine was ruled by Britain. Different reasons have been mentioned for why the British included the Balfour Declaration in their mandate for Palestine. But whatever those reasons are, the declaration is widely viewed as a catalyst for the Nakba, a disastrous time many historians refer to as the climax of the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians. To create Israel, major Palestinian cities and hundreds of villages had already come under attack, scores of massacres carried out, and hundreds of thousands of people expelled from their homes. The ethnic cleansing of Palestinians continued in the years afterwards. In 1967, during a bloody conflict, Israel occupied more Palestinian land, including Jerusalem al-Quds, a city of great importance to the Palestinian people. Today, Israeli atrocities have taken other forms, from arbitrary detentions and killing of the Palestinians in the occupied West Bank to deadly airstrikes on the blockaded Gaza Strip. Decades on since the Nakba, more than 7 million Palestinians still live in refugee camps, mainly in neighboring Arab states. But wherever they live, all share the same hope that one day they will return to their ancestral homes. They say they have the right to return.
Protesters have also filled the streets in the countries around the world in solidarity with Palestinians on Nakba Day. Thousands hit the streets of Australia, New Zealand, and the United States carrying Palestinian flags and chanting anti-Israel slogans. The rallies took place in the cities of Sydney, Melbourne, Auckland, San Francisco, and San Diego. Similar demonstrations were held in Europe on Saturday. Protesters there denounced Israeli brutalities against Palestinians, but the German capital, Berlin, banned all public commemoration of Nakba, sparking criticism from the pro-Palestinian groups. The rallies in Europe were held in major cities, including Vienna, Copenhagen, and London.
On On May 15, 1948, the Zionist regime forced some 750,000 Palestinians to leave their homes and villages and expelled them into refugee camps that still exist in the occupied West Bank, Gaza, Jordan, Syria, and Lebanon. Armed Zionist forces massacred entire villages of men, women, and even children. That pushed rightful owners of Palestine to leave their homes and lands as they feared losing their lives. Consequently, that provided the ground for Zionists to establish the Israeli regime. The Palestinians were to suffer further when the West Bank and Gaza fell to the Israelis during the 1967 war, also known as the Six-Day War. Millions of Palestinians, including those displaced since 1948, found themselves under military occupation as well as further Israeli expansionism in their lands. Palestinians want the West Bank as part of a future independent Palestinian state, with East al-Quds as its capital. But Israel's settlement expansion and annexation plans have dealt a serious blow to any prospects of peace. The Gaza Strip has also been under an inhumane Israeli land, air, and sea siege since 2007, and witnessed three wars since 2008. More than 600,000 Israelis currently live in over 230 settlements built since the 1967 Israeli occupation of the West Bank and East al-Quds. That's while all Israeli settlement activities are illegal under international law. Every year, Palestinians reaffirm their right to return to their homes and villages in historic Palestine on Nakba Day. They hold annual rallies to commemorate decades of ethnic cleansing of their homeland by the Zionist regime to establish what's known today as Israel. This year, thousands of Palestinians and their supporters across the globe have taken to the streets to hold mass rallies in commemoration of the 74th anniversary of Nakba, or Catastrophe Day, and to condemn the recent killing of a veteran Palestinian journalist by Israeli forces. Shirin Abu Aghla was fatally shot by Israeli troops as she was covering an army raid on the Jenin refugee camp in the northern part of the occupied West Bank. Targeting the media organizations and journalists isn't an accident. This is systematic targeting of media to create a cloak of secrecy around Israeli crimes.
This is something that is extremely important because it is the part of the historical memory of culture and people who have been subjugated by an illegal occupation of an apartheid regime.
Meanwhile, a Palestinian succumbs to a wound that he sustained from the Israeli gunfire in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin. Dawood al-Zubaydi was shot by Israeli snipers during a raid on the Jenin refugee camp 2 days ago. He was a former prisoner in Israeli jails. Jenin has recently turned into a flashpoint due to repeated Israeli attacks. Regime forces have been raiding the area in search of suspects of deadly Palestinian operations deep inside Israel, including its capital, Tel Aviv. Several Palestinians have been killed in the Israeli raids so far. Veteran Palestinian journalist Shirin Abu Aghla was also fatally shot by Israeli forces while covering these raids. Moving on, Lebanese people are heading to the polls to cast their ballots for a new parliament in the hope of reviving the country's battered economy. Nearly 4 million people are eligible to vote across 15 electoral districts. They will be picking from over 700 candidates contesting for 128-seat parliament. The results are expected to be announced on Monday. The elections come amid an unprecedented economic crisis that began in 2019, leading to a currency collapse and plunging over 70% of the population into poverty. Last election was held in 2018, with Hezbollah resistance movement and its allies winning the majority of the seats. The Hezbollah chief blames the crisis on a U.S.-led conspiracy against Lebanon. The next parliament is due to vote on key reforms required by the International Monetary Fund to unlock financial support. It will also elect a new president to replace Michel Aoun, whose term ends on the end of October. Our correspondent Mariam Saleh is here with all the latest. Mariam, give us an update on the situation, the elections, the results, everything.
Well, up until now, we can just see that the turnout is basically similar to what we saw in 2018. We have in most of the districts are between 30 to 40% have already voted. We have less than an hour left until the end of the polling stations, until they close. And for example, here in Beirut, as we said earlier, this is one of the districts and one of the polling stations here in Beirut where you see that a lot of people are coming to vote. You have representatives and delegates from several parties. You have from Hezbollah and you have from other parties within Beirut as well. Beirut is a bit of a unique situation where you have a major political component, which is the Future Movement headed by Saad Hariri, that is not taking part in the elections this year after some 40 years of the Hariri politics actually had been ruling the country, whether in the economic policies or even in other foreign affairs policies and so on and so forth. And the fact that many blame also that elite of the politics in using a specific type of economic policy, which is mainly based on debt and loans and so on and so forth, and not focusing on sustainable development. And so one of the reasons why the people have, of course, been not very happy with what is happening, and we saw the protests in to begin in 2019. However, those protests were taken somewhere else by several groups. You have some certain groups that are mainly backed by the U.S. embassy, and you have other groups that are backed by the Saudi embassy, and some of them that are backed by some of the groups within Lebanon, like the Lebanese forces, the Falangist party, that are also backed by the West. And that is why even those that wanted to see the change they were seeking for after the protests of 2019 seem to be now in somewhat of a despair, a state of despair where they did not see that this change would happen as long as you have old parties like the Lebanese forces headed by Samir Jaja and the Falangists being taken by these protests and being taking themselves as masters of these and lords of those protests, and therefore they understood that this would not reach anywhere. And this is why many have abstained and have retreated, even those candidates that truly seek change. You have, but on the other hand, you have the resistance, you have Hezbollah, you have its allies, the Yamal movement, the Free Patriotic movement, the Marada movement, which is headed by Sleiman Frangieh, who notably is considered to be the most prominent figure who has high chances of being elected as a president of the Republic after President Michel Aoun. All these groups tended to maintain that alliance, that strong alliance between them, in addition to some of the other national groups, like in some places the Syrian Arabist party, the Communist Party in some areas, and some other groups, in addition to the biggest component of the Christians, which is the Free Patriotic Movement. Of course, as you know, this elections, as all previous elections, is based on sectarian standards, but with the proportionate representation law, it is somewhat different. It gives a chance to those who are outside the realm of the major political groups to have a chance to be able to win the elections, because they do not vote, count the votes based on the majority and minority. The votes are counted based on the proportionate representation of each sect and how many people voted. And that is divided by the number of seats as well, in addition to the fact that there is a preferred vote for so many people choose, for example, one name, which is a preferred vote, and does have, and this a candidate gets higher votes than anyone in the winning slate, if we may call it, then this candidate does have a chance to break the other slate and win the elections. Of course, these are just technicalities. However, the main issue is the political bickering that has continued. It's not just from 2019. This has been the case in 2005. After 2005, you had 2006 Israeli war and the U.S. Stance or attempts to create a new Middle East. Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah just recently in his campaigns, electoral campaigns speeches, mentioned that what we are facing today is a new 2006 July war, but this time it's not a military war, it's a political war. And why did he say that? Because most of the candidates that are backed by the U.S., backed by the West and Saudi Arabia, of course, their main slogans are not development, sustainable development, equilibrium when it comes to helping the country come out of this socio-economic, financial, monetary, the list goes on, crisis. But their main slogan is to marginalize a main component, which is Hezbollah.
Okay, thank you very much, Maram Saleh. We're going to have to get back to you because this is a real and important issue, but we're running out of time, so let's move on to our next story. Finland has confirmed that it would apply for membership of a NATO military alliance, a move that will certainly escalate tensions with Russia. Finnish President called the move historic, saying a new era is opening. Sauli Niinistö expressed readiness to hold talks with his Turkish counterpart after Ankara raised objections to Finland and Sweden joining NATO. Finland's parliament will convene on Monday to approve the membership proposal. Sweden's ruling Social Democrat Party is also scheduled to explain its decision-making process over NATO membership later today. The Swedish government's plan to join NATO, however, has sparked criticism in the country, with protesters gathering in the capital, Stockholm, to express their opposition. A local organization called Say No to NATO organized a protest. It says the government would be shirking main responsibility of protecting Sweden's independence if it decides to join the military alliance. In the meantime, foreign ministers of NATO's 30 member states are holding 2 days of talks in Berlin that are focused on membership bids of Sweden and Finland. NATO says it is confident that it can quickly admit the two Nordic countries despite Turkish objections. Russia has warned that the two states of NATO in a retaliation if they join NATO. And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners of Listeners Special, and welcome to this week's edition of this program. Of course, on this beautiful Sunday, May 15th, 2022, I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today. Warm greetings to you all, and as you know, Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about IRIB English Radio broadcast. And if you have any message for our great listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard. Please do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Please keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, the Sunday program. And as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers, because these reception reports enable us to provide a better service to our great listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an eQSL card or an electronic QSL card from us. So here, I do send my appreciations to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Bashir Ahmad from Bangladesh, Juan Coba from Spain, and Bill McDavid from the US. So, Bashir, Bill, and Juan, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio and your program, of course, Listeners Special. And of course, here we've received many emails and letters from around the world, which I mention some of their names here. And later during the program, I will read these emails, including an email from Eddie Witanto from Indonesia. Eddie is one of our regular listeners. Of course, from India, we've received an email from Pradeep Chandra Kanda, one of our old and regular listeners. From Finland, we've received an email from Olof Ratovara, one of our regular listeners. Kurt Ettlinger from Germany has sent us an email. And Mickey Delmage from Canada, of course, has sent us an email, which I will read these emails after a short break. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Listeners Special, and Eddie Witanto from Indonesia has sent us an email. Eddie says, firstly, let me send you my greetings from Jakarta. Thank you for your email. Almost every day, I tune into the IRIB English Radio because a variety of topics and issues about Iranian culture and society are presented in the programs, and they are very interesting. Best regards from Indonesia. Salam and warm greetings from Iran, from Tehran, and from IRIB English Radio to Eddie Witanto from Indonesia. Eddie, thank you very much for sending us such a nice email. And thank you for letting us know your opinion about our broadcast. As you said, almost every day you tune into the IRIB English Radio because it broadcasts a variety of topics and issues about the Iranian culture and society. And that's great. It made my day. I mean, this email. Thank you very much. Eddie Witanto from Indonesia. My colleagues will soon send you an eQSL card as a verification. Please write to us soon. We are looking forward to hearing from you soon. Eddie Witanto from Indonesia, one of our great and regular listeners. And from India, we've received an email from Pradeep Chandra Kanda, one of our regular listeners. So let's see what Pradeep says. Pradeep says, dear friends, warm greetings from India. This is my communication after a long time, actually. IRIB English radio programs have not been audible well here for many days. Same experience with your other services too. I thought IRIB was gradually preparing to leave the shortwave forever, as many other stations had already done. Anyway, last evening, I could listen your English program considerably well. I was really surprised. I at once decided to submit you a reception report. Kindly check the contents of this report with attached audio clips. I would appreciate your QSL verification card in return if it satisfies you. With best regards and best wishes. Salam and warm greetings to you, Pradeep Chandra Kanda from India. And thank you very much for sending us this email. So for many days, you had the problem in receiving IRIB English radio signals. I don't know why. Of course, we will let our technicians and engineers know about this problem which happened in your region, Pradeep. What a pity that you couldn't receive the signals of IRIB English radio. Anyway, we will let our technicians and engineers know about this problem, and thank God you could finally receive the signals of IRIB English radio. That's great. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a verification. Thank you very much for letting us know about this problem. And thank you very much for letting us know here about you again, Pradeep Chandra from India. Write to us soon. We're looking forward to hearing from you soon. And at any time you had the problem in receiving the signals, you can refer to our website at www.parstoday.com/en. And then, after fixing the problem, you can refer to the shortwave. Write to us soon, Pradeep Chandra. So, after a short break, I will be back with other emails from around the world. Please stay with us. Welcome back. Here we've received an email from Kurt Ettlinger from Germany. So let's see what Kurt Ettlinger says. Dear sir or madam of the team of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting, as a DXing fan, I scanned my radio dial and I found your frequency. I listened to the news and commentary about the Saudi war in Yemen and your support, which was very informative. I found your programs very interesting and full of information, especially your broadcast lecture of the Islamic Society. I hope I would be able to find more secondary frequencies of your station. So I would be very grateful to you if you can send me a QSL card or an EQSL for my reception report. Thank you in advance. Salam and warm greetings to you from Iran, from Tehran, and from IRIB English Radio. To you, Kurt Ettlinger from Germany. Please accept our appreciations for sending us this email and for letting us know your views and opinions about the broadcast of IRIB English Radio. As you said, you could catch the program, the news and commentary about the Saudi war in Yemen, and your support, which you found it very informative. Yes, IRIB English Radio always tries to cover up the world developments and the developments in the world which most Western media don't cover it. For example, the Saudi war in Yemen, the Saudi war, the Saudi-led war, the US-backed war in Yemen, which is not covered up by most Western media. So we here in IRIB English Radio, as I said, try to cover all the issues, almost all the issues which is happening around the world in an unbiased, non-partial way. And that's great that you can receive the signals of IRIB English Radio and let us know your opinion about this broadcast. So it was great that you found the programs of IRIB English Radio very interesting and very informative. As you said, you found it full of information. And it seems that you listen to the broadcast lecture of the Islamic Society, and that's great. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card, an electronic QSL card as a verification, because sending a paper QSL card is not possible at the moment because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Kurt Ettlinger from Germany, thank you very much for sending us this email and letting us know your views about our broadcast. Write to us soon. And from Finland, we've received an email from Olof Ratvara. So Olof says, greetings from Finland. I am a 53-year-old DXer. I'm very happy of finding your English program. I like to listen shortwave stations, collect stamps, and play chess in a club. I have sent my reception reports to you, English section of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Thank you for your programs. I should be very pleased to receive your verification. Salam and warm greetings to you, Olof, from Finland. Thank you very much for writing to us. You wrote about your hobbies. You like DXing, you like receiving shortwave stations and collecting stamps and playing chess in a club, as you said. And that's great. Olof, my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio broadcast. So after a short break, I will be back with other emails from around the world. Welcome back. Mickey Delmage from Canada has sent us an email. Mickey says, Dear IRIB English Radio staff, greetings from Canada. I would like to tell you of my reception of your radio recently and would be very much appreciated to receive your verification QSL card. If available, I would like to add a sticker or logo souvenir of your station to my collection. I have noticed that although your signal is strong, the voice modulation is low, making listening challenging at times. I hope your engineering department will be able to correct this problem. I do hope you will be able to verify match reception with your QSL card. Thank you very much for your kind time. Salam and warm greetings to you, Mickey Delmage from Canada. And please accept our warm gratitudes for sending us this email. And thank you very much for letting us know about the quality of the programs. As you said, the signal was strong, but the voice modulation was low. Of course, my colleagues will soon fix this problem. I let my colleagues know about this problem and they will soon fix it. Thank you very much for letting us know about this problem. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation and verification. But regarding your request for sending you a sticker or logo souvenir of IRIB English Radio, sending any promotional item or material at the time of pandemic is not possible on behalf of IRIB English Radio. Please, at the time being, accept our EQSL card. But in the future, after the pandemic, we, of course, will soon send you a sticker, logo, souvenir, or promotional items of IRIB English Radio to you. Write to us soon, Mickey Delmage from Canada. Thank you again for sending us this email. And here we reach to the end of this week's listeners special. But before wrapping up the program, again, I do send my appreciations to those of our great listeners who have kindly sent us emails, letters, and reception reports, including Olof Ratovara from Finland, Eddie Vitanto from Indonesia, Pradeep Chandra Kanda from India, Kurt Ettlinger from Germany, Juan Koba from Spain, Bashir Ahmad from Bangladesh, Bill McDavid from the US, and Mickey Delmage from Canada. Many thanks for being with us. Please keep in touch with us and have a good time.
listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to englishradio@irib.ir. That is one word, englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The astronomical level of student debt accrued in the United States is inflicting lasting generational damage on the lives of millions of Americans. More than 45 million Americans are now carrying more than $1.7 trillion worth of debt, most of it owed to the federal government. The article you're about to hear has been written by the editorial board of the New York Times. The article has been published in the opinion section of the newspaper. The piece is titled, Student Debt is Crushing. Cancelling it for everyone is still a bad idea. The The astronomical level of student debt accrued in the United States is inflicting lasting generational damage on the lives of millions of Americans. More than 45 million Americans are now carrying more than $1.7 trillion worth of debt, most of it owed to the federal government. The burden of that debt is crushing and follows borrowers throughout their lives. It is delaying marriage and home buying and the birth of children. It leaves some students broke on the day after graduation. Others labor for years only to find their balances larger than when they graduated. Lower income students who must borrow heavily to obtain that degree can end up earning middle class incomes without being able to lead middle class lives. Around 40% of borrowers never graduate from school in the first place, and a third of the debt will never be paid off, according to the U.S. Department of Education. The Biden administration should spend its finite resources and political capital on fixing the higher education system in America to make it more affordable while helping those borrowers in most distress. There are already ways to do this, although they have not gotten nearly enough attention or resources. Cancelling student debt across the board is not one of them. Trying to fix such a shattered system with a flick of a pen on an executive order could even make it worse. Cancelling this student debt, even in the limited amounts that the White House is considering, would set a bad precedent and do nothing to change the fact that future students will graduate with yet more debt, along with the blind hope of another future amnesty. Such a move is legally dubious, economically unsound, politically fraught, and educationally problematic. As a candidate, Joe Biden said he supported congressional action to tackle student debt. Legal experts disagree about whether the president has the authority to cancel student loan debt through an executive order, as the White House is now considering. That raises the possibility that this issue could be dragged out in the courts of law for years. All told, 79 million American adults have had student loans at some point in their lives. Nearly half have paid them off entirely. Waiving $10,000 in student debt, the amount that Joe Biden proposed during his presidential campaign, could clear the books of as many as 15 million of the more than 45 million Americans who still owe borrowed money for school. Proponents of debt cancellation argue that Democrats need to deliver on a campaign promise to a key constituency, and it may well be politically advantageous for them to do so before the midterm elections in November, when turnout of the Democratic base will be critical to the party's success. But if the Biden administration puts forward a plan that voters do not regard as fair, the party could face a backlash at the polls. Since Joe Biden took office, his Department of Education has taken several important steps to alleviate some of the burden of loans for borrowers who are unable to pay and forgiven the debts of some students defrauded by for-profit schools. Throughout the pandemic, borrowers have been forgiven the interest that accrued on their loans each month, in addition to not having to pay down the principal value of the loan. The Biden administration has extended the pause several times, and it is now set to expire on 31st of August. The moratorium on payment of federal loans, which make up more than 90% of all student debt, has already cost $100 billion and has cancelled the equivalent of $5,500 in debt per borrower. The White House is considering various proposals for debt cancellation, possibly with income-based limits for eligibility. Such limits are crucial because they direct the help to to those most in need. An across-the-board cancellation would be tremendously regressive, according to an analysis by the Brookings Institution. Most debt is held by higher-income households, and so any amount of universal forgiveness will benefit them disproportionately. In fact, the growth of student debt for graduate school, held by students whose degrees will offer them the greatest future earning potential, is a major driver of overall student debt. Graduate students account for some 37% of all federal student debt, and there is a lucrative return on investment for getting certain advanced degrees. Federal repayment plans adjust monthly payments based on income and family size and extend repayment periods. Debts are eligible for forgiveness after 10, 20, or 25 years of payments. Around 30% of all borrowers with federal loans are in such a program, and more borrowers could benefit from participating in one. But the repayment programs have a poor track record. Not long ago, fully 98% of people who applied to have their debts waived had their claims rejected. A report from the Government Accountability Office, GAO, in March found that millions of dollars in student debt could already have been forgiven if the programs had been administered properly. Richard Cordray, the Chief Operating Officer at Federal Student Aid, an Education Department agency, called the failure really inexcusable. The Education Department has been working to fix these programs by retroactively giving qualified borrowers more credit for time spent in public service and hoeing through a backlog of paperwork, but it could do more. Additional changes to income-based repayment programs, such as reducing interest payments, lowering eligibility standards, and exempting forgiven student loan debts from taxation, could have big impacts over time, according to a report from the Pew Research Center. Congress and the Education Department should look to such changes as part of a more sustainable solution to the debt problem. Lawmakers should also consider making it easier to discharge student loans through bankruptcy, a measure of relief that is available for credit card and mortgage debt. Changes to bankruptcy law in 2005 have also made those protections less accessible. The Education Department has started a long-overdue crackdown on predatory schools, another significant source of student debt defaults. The Obama administration tightened the rules on for-profit schools, but the Trump administration's Education Department, under Betsy DeVos, relaxed those rules and let repayment and forgiveness programs atrophy. Last month, the Department of Education discharged $238 million in debt held by 28,000 people who attended the Marinello Schools of Beauty, which closed in 2016. The school engaged in pervasive and widespread misconduct, a Department of Education investigation has found. Since 2021, the Biden administration has approved more than $18.5 billion in loan discharges for more than 750,000 borrowers, including $6.8 billion for 113,000 people in the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, and $8.5 billion for more than 400,000 borrowers with total and permanent disabilities. The Biden administration is also pushing to double the maximum Pell Grant and restore a rule that holds schools accountable for the gainful employment of their graduates, a measure aimed at for-profit colleges. Those moves are all to the good, addressing the student debt crisis with policies that are both compassionate and fair. They will not, however, solve structural inequalities like the racial wealth gap. Supporters of the debt forgiveness argue that targeted relief is inadequate and that broader relief would help to close the racial wealth gap. Black college students on average, owe $25,000 more than their white peers. More than half of black borrowers report that their net worth is less than the balance of their student loans. And black borrowers are most likely than their white peers to drop out of school before receiving a university degree. But across-the-board debt forgiveness will not help, as a recent report from the Brookings Institution concluded, only targeted policies based on race or socioeconomic status can address the inequalities, inequities caused by federal student lending programs. While inflated college tuitions are part of the reason for the rise in student debt, average student debt is now up to $36,800 from $24,700 a decade ago. It bears nothing that the number of students receiving loans to attend college has also increased. In other words, American students keep borrowing to attend college because a degree still offers the promise of prosperity. The Biden administration should focus on confronting the problems with college affordability and loan repayment, so more students and more graduates have a better chance at that prosperity.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, Hadith of the Day, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble hadith, which has been narrated from the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And this hadith is about accepting the truth. The Holy Prophet Muhammad says, "Accept the truth from anyone who comes to you with it, be he lowly or noble, even if he himself is detestable to you." So if somebody brings us the truth, even if we don't like the person, even if he's a low person, he comes from a lower class of society than us, we may even have some problem with the person. We may have some, you know, enmity with the person. But still, if he brings us the truth, we should accept it. And reject falsehood from anyone who comes to you with it, be he lowly or noble, even if he is beloved to you. If somebody lies to us and brings something false to us, right? Even if we like the person, even if we love the person, he's our relative, he's our father, he's our mother, he's our child, or whoever he may be, we still should reject that lie, right? We should reject the lie and not accept it. In general terms, we should accept the truth from whoever it is coming from. In a similar hadith, Imam Sadiq is reported to have said, "Honor, al-iz, honor is that you humble yourself to the truth when you face it." Now, the truth doesn't necessarily have to be a statement that is true, right? It could be an action which implies the truth, right? Or similarly, falsehood doesn't necessarily have to be a spoken lie. It could be an action performed by somebody which kind of implies something false. And in general terms, we can say that we should kind of understand what the truth is, and in this way understand truthful people. We shouldn't try to like understand what the truth is based on certain people, right? Who we consider to be true people, or conversely understand what is false based on certain people that we think are false or bad. You know, Imam Ali has been narrated to have said that verily the truth is not known through men. Al-haq la ya'raf bil-rijal. You cannot understand what is true through men by kind of associating it with certain people who you like. Or you can't understand falsehood from, you know, relating it to certain people that you don't like. The Imam says, know the truth first and you will know its people. You should understand what is the truth is. اعرف الحق تعرف أهله. Meaning understand first what the truth is, you know. And then we can understand who true people are, who good people are, who we should associate with and who we should not associate with. We should make the truth a criterion for our associations, and not vice versa, our associations the criterion for what truth and falsehood are. Similarly, the Imam said, do not let consideration for a people's right hinder you from upholding the truth when it is against them. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at truth in the words of the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hussain Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello, welcome to The Debate. I'm Kaveh Tahlaib. Nakba Day is marked by Palestinians in the world every year on May 15th. The anniversary of the day Israel was created and landed in Palestine, taking away land from Palestinians and expelling hundreds of thousands of Palestinians from their land. In this edition of the program,